We acknowledge that we are on the traditional lands of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples' spirit, imagination, and rich history of storytelling and humour that is an inspiration for all Australians.
Hello and welcome to another episode of The Bearer of Weird News. As always, I am your host and the suppository of all wisdom, Matt Harvey. 5050, it's our 50th episode, our Jubilee episode. It's 50 Shades of Yay. Celebrating 50 is a big round number, and we love big round numbers here. So, the 50th anniversary is, of course, the gold anniversary, which is convenient as this episode is full of comedy gold. Now, normally, these episodes are the occasional mix of comedy tin and comedy platinum, averaging out to some comedy gold, but this one is all gold, guaranteed. To celebrate, we'll be doing joint celebrations with local events. To start, we are partaking in National Mascot Day by getting 50 of the best mascots to throw down in the MCG at a SmackDown extravaganza. No holds barred, 50 mascots enter, one mascot leaves event, where the results will be legally binding. All the mascots that do not survive will need to be replaced with new, more dynamic, and if necessary, less racist or problematic mascots. It might be the only way to get some of them to change. You know, if they're killed off in an event where people can bet and possibly make a little bit of money, then they might be willing to give up on the idea of holding on to the past for some sweet, sweet dollars. And we can get a really nice ally to volunteer to take one for the team to eradicate the racist mascot so they can do some real action for a change. And our final partner for this 50th episode celebration will be teaming up with World Refugee Day. Unsurprisingly, Australia loves to celebrate World Refugee Day and will hold its annual celebration on Nauru, as is tradition after all. Of course, World Refugee Day is all about raising awareness, which might be a little bit difficult when the media aren't invited to cover the celebrations, as they are all busy that day, we were so graciously informed. But we'll do our best to celebrate nonetheless. Before we get into the main episode, just a little update. We've got some shows coming up. I've got shows in the Darwin Fringe Festival on the 21st and the 22nd of my storytelling show, Wage Against the Machine, at Dom's Bar and Lounge. If you want times, just check the Fringe Festival website. I will be in Edinburgh doing the same show from the 5th to the 27th at Cannon's Gate at 8:15 every day. The 5th to the 27th, that's a pay what you can show. So if you know someone in the area, if you enjoy partaking in the Fringe Festival, then come down, chuck a donation in the bucket. And we have locked in some dates for the Sydney Fringe Festival. Yes, it's all locked in. We know what we're doing now. Again, Wage Against the Machine will be happening on the 14th, the 16th, and the 17th. Two nights at 8, 10, and one night at 7. 10, I should double check that, but I will be at the Factory Theatre. So if you are in Sydney, you know someone who's in the area for Fringe, which is in September, I will be there those dates. But until then, I will be the bearer of weird news. Let's start with the headlines. A new and very unnecessary study has been released. The study is titled The Scrotum, a comparison of men's and women's aesthetic assessments. Yeah, that's right. The study of if scrotums are ugly. Ultimately, the conclusion said that it was barely possible to identify a beautiful scrotum. We must instead speak of the least ugly scrotum. The study can be read in Inevitable Predictable Outcomes magazine. I think you'll enjoy reading that one. It's a nail biter. Sperm counts around the world have halved over the past 50 years, with the pace of decline more than doubling since 2000, according to recent research on male fertility. Scientists believe that we have pinpointed the main cause of why: age, pollution, lifestyle. Apparently, living on the brink of extinction has encouraged us to take inspiration from the panda and just really trying to rush to the finish line of existence. And here we thought Gen Z were disassociated and depressed. Man, these kids haven't even been born yet, and they are doing their best to already not exist. It's like that cutscene from the end of The Butterfly Effect, but en masse. Just little sperms strangling themselves with their own tails. Just these kids, however, must be praised as heroes, because they are doing their best to save the environment by not existing in the first place, thus causing older generations to fall into a Children of Men type dystopia of despair, dirt, and compelling one-shot takes, as they realize that they'll be the last generation and fall into an existential funk. After more than 30 years of searching for Nessie, Loch Ness monster hunter Steve Feltham was interviewed by the BBC, where he said he thought the task would have been easier. Look, a not unreasonable thought, given that the monster lives in a single loch, but it is hampered only by the fact that the only monster at Loch Ness is the desperation for tourism. I want to mock this guy, but he could have really wasted his time by becoming a ticket inspector or a landlord. At least he's out there trying to do something with his life. A 23-year-old Snapchat influencer who created an AI version of herself to be an AI girlfriend for lonely people says it's gone rogue, and she's working around the clock to stop it saying sexually explicit things. Hang on, Snapchat? There are still Gen Z on Snapchat? I just thought Snapchat was the Facebook of video platforms. You know, it's the easiest place to show pictures of your children to relatives who refuse to learn a new social media platform. Shows what I know, I guess. Amazon is offering US customers $10 to pick up a package of $25 or more, rather than have it shipped to a home address. Throwing their hands in the air, they were heard complaining, "Fine! Well, now you're taking the money out of our drivers' pockets, and we're going to write dozens of think pieces about you. See? It's not so easy, is it?" Illinois is poised to become the first state to withhold state funding from any of the state's 1,600 public or school libraries that ban books. Effectively, banning book bans. Republicans are unimpressed with this measure and will be working to not only stop the new measure, but to put a ban on banning book bans. A ban on the books, baby, ban! No word yet on when we'll be withholding funding from police for their inability to protect or serve large portions of the community, but hey man, baby steps, baby steps. Australian Airlines could soon be forced to pay cash compensation to passengers whose flights are delayed or cancelled as the government faces mounting calls to introduce laws to rein in carriers arbitrarily changing their schedules. Advocates of such a scheme claim local laws are lagging behind the rest of the world, though they were originally due to arrive years ago but had been unexpectedly changed without warning and are due to arrive again in 2030. Oh, no, wait, hang on, that's 2035. Oh, no, sorry, I've just been updated. That's actually 2040. Well, at least it should be here before the submarines arrive. And so that's like at least a plus, I think. An audit report has revealed one of the world's biggest defense contractors, BAE Systems, tried to bill the Australian government $55,000 for Christmas cards and decorations. Sorry, what? Did all of their Christmases come at once? $55,000 on decorations and cards? Christmas cards. They know how people treat Christmas cards, right? They open it up, they see if there's money inside, and then they put them in the bin. If I wanted to waste $55,000 on something that nobody would ever read and would go straight in the bin, I'd commission a report into government waste. When asked why they thought it'd be appropriate to spend so much on Christmas decorations, let alone try to charge the public for them, they said it was justified as defense spending in the war on Christmas. The aerosol fallout from wildfires that burned across more than 70,000 square miles of Australia in 2019 and 2020 was so persistent and widespread that it fueled 3 years of Super La Nina. Marvel and DC are currently in talks about which of their universes will be able to include Super La Nina as a major threat in the next part of their extended universes. You can read the published research in Future Dystopias and Guns magazine. The first UK baby created with DNA from three people has been born through the use of a pioneering IVF procedure. This new procedure means Boris Johnson can finally meet his goal of getting just a little bit of himself into every citizen in the UK. In a world first, this group of fillet has been created from cells grown in a lab and then 3D printed into a natural fish fillet shape. Despite being 3D printed, the fish still has more actual fish in it than Subway's tuna. And fish fingers, of course. But still isn't as fishy as the RBA's excuses for lifting the rate of inflation. In the wake of yet another mass shooting, a Fox News guest recommended that Americans who fear they may be a victim of the next shooting should be polite and professional, but plan to kill everyone you meet. America has fallen so in love with billionaires, they are now recommending people live by the Batman strategy of friendship. Just know how you would kill them if you absolutely had to. Ironically, the people prepared to live like they have a need to kill everyone they meet only really have one friend, their gun. And statistically speaking, it is the thing most likely to kill them. I imagine it's much like when a woman dates any man. AI pioneer Geoffrey Hinton told Reuters that artificial intelligence could pose a more urgent threat to humanity than climate change. Fortunately, we are very serious about climate change, so we should hop on this AI emergency in only 20 or 30 years, as it is becoming just too late to do anything about it. Alright, now we're moving on to the larger news. First up, it is protest news. South Australia, Australia's beta test that never really got the upgrade. South Australia has made news recently after Extinction Rebellion did a pretty standard Extinction Rebellion thing and interrupted some people's ability to show up to their job that they didn't even like in an attempt to annoy them into being better to the planet. But South Australia wasn't having it, and in retaliation for some pretty minor inconveniences, protesters will now face harsher punishments. Authorities and politicians took action against protesters after 3 days of disruptions by Extinction Rebellion. One of the protests even involved a 69-year-old woman abseiling over a city bridge and disrupting peak hour traffic for about 90 minutes. Honestly, a pretty badass thing to do for a 69-year-old. And the fact that you're pushing against this just tells me Adelaide doesn't want an exciting world-class city, and in fact, let the Grand Prix go on purpose for this very reason. Extinction Rebellion said the action was to give a life or death message to delegates attending a nearby Australian Petroleum Production and Exploration Association conference at the Adelaide Convention Centre, just furthering Adelaide's argument for expelling all events and any sense of fun, excitement or activity from the city as a whole. They'll then rename the Adelaide Convention Centre to the former Centre for Overstimulation and Disruption, and everyone will self-impose a bedtime of 9 p.m. after a hearty meal. Following the demonstration, the state government rushed into Parliament legislation increasing the maximum fines for public obstruction. Oh, don't worry though. Premier Peter Melanakis said the legislative change makes zero amendments to the ability for people to protest peacefully in South Australia. It'll only impact their financial capacity for them to do so. But the fundamental right to protest will still exist in theory. And so, like many good things in science, like dark matter, dark energy, and the multiverse, they only exist in theory. So, as you are so keen on believing science, why even have protests? We can theoretically hypothesize that they would exist and tut our tongues and tisk our lips in disapproval of the things that we don't like from the comfort of our homes in our hypothetical protest, hypothetically protesting and hypothetically making change for the better. Now, isn't that much nicer? What's the change to the law then? What's it even going to look like? Is calling these changes draconian a reference to ancient Athens leader Draco, who introduced the concepts of intentional and unintentional homicide, meaning since murder cases were tried by the state, feuds as a form of justice became illegal. So keeping that in mind, and the possibly more important point that most crimes became punishable by death, and any debtor of a lower social status than their creditor would be forced into debt slavery. Okay, so keeping all that in mind, are we blowing this out of proportion? So, we aren't selling on into slavery or killing anyone. We are simply driving them into such depths of financial instability that they will be forced to work three or four jobs to pay off their debt, let alone pay rent and food and save for a house, so that they won't have time to spend planning elaborate methods of protesting, nor afford to spend money on frivolous things like textures or glitter to make their signs that grab attention. So, you make up your own mind about where we've landed on the draconian thing. Especially since the law increases the maximum penalty from $750 to $50,000 or imprisonment for 3 months. While other states have legislated longer maximum jail terms, the $50,000 maximum fine is by far the harshest monetary penalty in Australia for this type of offence, a mere 60-fold increase to the maximum financial penalty. Woof. I'm not sure which is more exploitative, the inflation of food prices under cover of war, the exploitation of renters, or the attempted silencing of dissenting voices by governments. Look, if you have an opinion on this, you can email it to Bearer of Weird News at the slow decline of the working class at thereturnoffeudalism.com. In a rare display of bipartisanship, both parties seem particularly keen on this, with opposition leader David Spears saying the protest proved costly for businesses, and there were reports people had been delayed attending appointments at the nearby Royal Adelaide Hospital. While Malanakis said, what cannot be allowed to occur is people to disrupt the rest of the community in such a way that compromises the risk and safety of others. Two very interesting and telling statements that will be great to throw in their faces in the next natural disaster that is accelerated or intensified due to man-made impacts on climate change, greed, or the deliberate clamping down of potentially life-saving information. If they want to impact the lives of others negatively, they need to do it quietly, behind closed doors, while twisting their mustaches like the oil and gas industries. Not in a way that tries to change the world for the better. This display by both major South Australian parties' governments said it was necessary to deter groups like Extinction Rebellion from disrupting the safe operation of the city and the state, noting that major disasters like these, of which South Australia has already experienced, including a number of climate changes as a result of global warming that has affected fire weather, including increased mean, maximum, and minimum temperatures, an increase in heat wave events, changes to rainfall patterns, an increase in evaporation, and an increase in the forest fire danger, don't disrupt the city from safe operation, as fires tend to happen in regional areas, and everyone evacuating the regions can then come closer to the city, actually stimulating the city's economy. So this is fine, actually. It's not a problem. What are you even talking about? Moving on now to terrorist news. Terrorism. It's the reason governments give when you rightly question why they feel they can do that thing that they're doing right now. An independent report has found a tool designed to predict future crime in terrorist offenders considered them at greater risk of offending if they were autistic, despite having no empirical basis to do so. The report found a lack of evidence underpinning the instrument had potentially serious implication for its validity and reliability, and found it was extremely poor at predicting risk. It's almost as if humans are deeply complex creatures whose inner workings are harder to know than the indication that you get when I actually end up buying a product that you've spent thousands of dollars pushing into my vision, either through the mere exposure effect or through decision fatigue, because I've had a difficult day today, might imply. But who knows? The report also found that autism spectrum disorders, as well as non-compliance with conditions or supervision, were included as risk factors in the tool through the most comprehensive systemic review that's been conducted on the drivers of radicalization and terrorist behavior and violence. Found not a single piece of empirical evidence supported the inclusion of those two factors. It's actually so bad at predicting whether or not someone's going to commit a crime, it is likely to be given a job as a cop in America, where it will rocket through the ranks, eventually becoming a captain and defending a slew of officers trained under its tutelage on how to recognize future criminals by watching Rain Man and saying, "See? See? Within 30 minutes of meeting this Rain Man, he's already committing crimes, defrauding a casino. Lock them all up." You know, the number one thing people say when a close friend or a neighbor turns out to be a killer is that they were mostly quiet and kept to themselves. But that's not a sign of autism, so much as it is a sign of someone murdering a bunch of people and trying to remain undetected in society. Probably worth mentioning that a small body of literature exists that suggests, rather than being more likely to engage in offending or violent behavior, individuals with autism spectrum disorder may actually have an increased risk of being the victim rather than the perpetrator of violence. Speaking of victims, the report said it was concerning that almost 60% of the cited evidence based for factor development of the tool was not empirical, and less than half of the work cited in the Vera 2.4 accurately reflected what was in the recorded texts. Just another reason why Australia moved away from the empirical system ages ago, just so long ago. It doesn't help us achieve our goals as a nation, hence our approach to refugee detention. We label them as dangerous, potentially terrorist, based on flaws, non-evidence, lock them away, and that is the Australian system. Moving on now to the future of JobSeeker news. JobSeeker, you've got a thing like it in your country. It's a small amount of money that we give to people out of work so that they'll remain just hungry enough to want to return to work, but will in no way help them have a stable enough life to be able to pursue said jobs. Well, it turns out that a taxpayer-funded employability course is exactly as useless as we all expected, and is now under fire after job seekers complained that much of the compulsory training involved being shown irrelevant, inappropriate, and at times bizarre YouTube videos, including a motivational montage created from a YouTube channel called Law of Attraction Coaching, which, according to their website, the Law of Attraction uses the power of minds to convert our thoughts into reality. So it's basically The Secret, which I always thought was just thought, to be honest with you. But apparently you need a whole book and like a coach to achieve this thought to reality pipeline. And they will tell you things like, our souls work like magnets and help clients to manage their vibrational energy. And people say spending money on job seekers so they can eat is a waste of taxpayer dollars. But compared to this, we could give them all a steak dinner once a month and it'd be a smarter and more delicious investment. Videos about safety protocols at a Dutch gas company and the application guidelines for a Victorian government tender were also shown, which weren't the most relevant videos one could be watching, but would be extremely useful if one was planning on following the many lucrative job opportunities in the Dutch gas industry. You just find them littered all over the streets. You can't even walk down a street in Melbourne without picking up a Dutch gas industry opportunity. Ugh, it's a nightmare. It's frankly an embarrassment of abundance. Under contracts previously signed by the coalition, the federal government will pay providers about $500 million over 5 years to run employability skills training courses as part of the Commonwealth's $7 billion Workforce Australia program. Meanwhile, in another session, the instructor encouraged job seekers to use ChatGPT to write cover letters and research industries. Now, you might have guffawed at the idea of telling job seekers to use ChatGPT to write cover letters, but I'm here to say this is actually the perfect tool for this exact kind of emotionless work speak. And if I'm honest with you, employment providers should be the first jobs replaced by AI or ChatGPT in the oncoming AI onslaught. It's like the Terminator coming back in time to destroy the wasteful and useless 9-to-5, and I'm all on board for it. Bodies like the Australian Unemployed Workers Union and the Australian Council of Social Service have long warned about the quality of programs such as employability skills training and Work for the Dole. And seeing as the creep of AI is coming for a bunch of our jobs anyway, this seems like the perfect place to start. We'd save $7 billion a year by destroying the industry that has, frankly, left a bunch of people in its employ without the necessary skills to pass their own employment class, as they never actually taught them in the first place. But, as teachers of the class, and I do use the term loosely, more substitute teachers, really, they know how ineffective their class really is, and would be more motivated than anybody to avoid going back into that class. But AI is perfect for wiping out these skills of useless sponge jobs and helping people live their best lives. Maybe taking up some art or doing some vision boarding. And if you don't think that vision boarding is a worthy pursuit of one's time, then you need to question why one of the videos in the employability course was a TED Talk titled "Drawing Your Dreams into Reality," which advocated creating vision boards for success. So it must work. We've spent $7 billion on an industry that tells people to do it. I'd be angry, but I'm just happy to see the arts still has a place in the future of the workplace. Moving on now to the housing crisis news. Yes, housing crisis update. The housing crisis is slogging on for another decade of kicking the poor who's dared to believe that they might be allowed to simply sit up after years of laying in the mud. Current chief kicker and RBA governor Philip Lowe has some new suggestions for those struggling under the immense weight of the cost of living / housing / inflation / corporate greed crisis. Just go back and edit the ones that you don't think apply to you. Some practical, reasonable, and not at all victim-blaming ideas are being floated to help solve the rental crisis. Phil Lowe says Australians should find housemates or stay with their parents to bring down rent prices. Now, no word yet on when the governor will offer up one of his 5 bedrooms from his home purchased in 1997 for $1.75 million, the same year that he was appointed head of the RBA's Economic Research Department and was aided by a half-price loan from the RBA, making him the beneficiary of a taxpayer-subsidised mortgage scheme in Randwick. But no doubt he's getting around to it after he is able to stabilise the amount of rooms that he wants to offer. First, it seemed that he would just offer one, and in fact it said it would just be the one, but it would maybe be 2, and then possibly be 3, and suddenly there was a surprise 4th, and now maybe he'll actually offer up the extra space in his lounge room and home office basement, attic, and all the available free space to help do his part to bring down inflation, as there's no other way that he could contribute to this ongoing crisis. Lo peered into the darkest timeline crystal ball and ominously foretold Senate estimates that rising rents and house prices may not be within the realm of the federal government's control due to strong population growth. Which does sound a bit like he is advocating for the wholesale culling of the population, which will have the dual benefits of helping mitigate Australia's climate change impact, meaning that we won't have to rush any climate action policy into action and can follow our previous plan of climate inaction instead. But hey, if he's got a problem with the size of the population, we can start declining it one homeowner at a time, one billionaire at a time, one millionaire at a time, until he thinks the numbers are appropriate. Lowe also said, as rents go up, people decide not to move out of home, or you don't have that home office, you get a flatmate. Higher prices do lead people to economise on housing. Going on to say, or if you save the money that you would otherwise have spent on rent, you could get a really nice tent, or a cheap car to live inside of. It's really easy to do. Now, one might accuse Lowe of callously taking the piss, punching down on the poorest families while attending a $25,000 a head dinner after raising the inflation rate for the 11th time. But there was just no other solution. Do you understand? It doesn't matter that vacancy rates are at record lows and supply is not keeping pace with growth, nor that the major political party who claims nobody will be left behind are proposing a plan that might as well be Albanese offering to fund public housing with winnings from his sports bet, Ladbrokes and Crown Casino accounts. The way that this ends up fixing itself is unfortunately through higher housing prices and higher rents. Thanks, Lowe. Thanks so much. Lowe has justified the rent rise by saying that if he was being frank, if families can afford these price-gouged supermarket basics, they clearly still have too much money. Currently, Labor and the Greens are in a standoff over the $10 billion Housing Future Fund, which Labor claims could see 30,000 social and affordable homes built in half a decade. The Greens insist that that does not go far enough and were initially demanding $5 billion every year for public housing, though they recently tried to meet Labor part of the way, reducing that to a $2.5 billion, requesting a two-year rent freeze to help people whose pays have stagnated over a decade to maybe keep their head above the water without having to put all of their energy into trying not to drown. Unsurprisingly, landlords raising their rent by 15% for the second or third year in a row say that a rent freeze is not sustainable. When asked if they thought that their insistence on not having a job and relying on the income of some of the poorest members of society who were incapable of buying a home of their own due to the stagnation of wages and the increase of costs of homes due to people using them as an investment and replacement for work as opposed to simply a place to shelter was sustainable, they didn't seem to understand the question. And asked us to send it to the real estate agent who could then decide if it was worth addressing and then might get back to us in 6 to 12 months with a resounding, how is this an issue for us? I mean, like, how is this an issue for us? We understand how it's an issue for you, but how is it an issue for us? Moving on now to golf news. Golf! An average of 2.08 billion gallons of water per day and often unregulated fertilizers and pesticides which cover the greenways to keep the grass looking unnaturally green, causing fertilizers to run off into bodies of water, causing a state of nutrient over-enrichment called eutrophication, which results in algal blooms that destroy ecosystems. Also, a good walk ruined. Golf has been in the news recently, as despite previously banning GPA players from joining the LIV Tour, the PGA has agreed to merge with LIV Golf, which, if you don't know, is backed by the Saudi Arabia Public Investment Fund, an entity controlled by Saudi Crown Prince and journalism critic Mohammed bin Salman, which just quickly is somewhat of a deceptive name, right? Calling it a public fund feels as appropriate as calling a swimming pool the Harold Holt Swim Center. Sure, it is named after them, but they have no control over it and certainly won't benefit from it in any way. Now, you might go so far as to call this money-hungry greed flip-flopping rhetoric controlled by the whims of those who splash the most cash, hypocritical cashinery. But you don't have an upcoming flight going through the neighbouring country and sometime ally Dubai. So I might actually be with LIV Golf's Bryson DeChambeau, who has suggested the families of 9/11 victims should forgive Saudi Arabia on the grounds that nobody's perfect. Now, of note to this statement is the mild caveat that even the American government hasn't officially acknowledged the involvement of the Saudi government in the 9/11 attacks. So, what does Bryson DeChambeau know that he is coming out ahead of the government on this front? Seems like a good package deal. Millions of dollars and inside knowledge about 9/11. You know what? I can see why they held out before agreeing to completely sell out their morals, right? Can you see it? Honestly, think about it. If someone else came up to you and said that you'll get millions of dollars to work as Hitler's personal assistant, of course you'd say no. But if they counter-offered with definitive proof of one of life's great mysteries, the mystery of your choice even, Bigfoot, Loch Ness, aliens, the JFK assassination, what happened to Harold Holt? You just might know the truth and nobody else does. You're saying yes to that, right? You're saying yes to that because there is more to life than just money. There is also the Illuminati and that secret knowledge. That's the real power. Yeah, the real power. PGA Tour Commissioner Jay Monahan, who was previously a vocal critic of LIV, described the mending of relations as a historic day after 2 years of disruption and distraction. How did we go from confrontation to now being partners? We just realised we were better off together than we were fighting or apart. Going on to say, yeah, we just realised we were better off together, the PGA organisers and the Saudi money, that is. If we take the Saudis' money, then they can't spend it on things like terrorists' attacks, you know? We're helping, we're saving you, alright? We're doing you a favour, okay? We're taking one for the team. Not everyone needs the secret knowledge, though some do for other reasons. Like Greg Norman, the CEO of LIV, who previously defended the competition and denied claims of being complicit in sports washing, saying every country has done horrendous things in the past. Just look at America with racism, for example. It's just so embedded here and it's just ugly. See, look, the freedom working for the morally questionable Saudis has allowed the shark. He can freely speak out against American injustice. And it's about time an old rich white guy stood up for a brown man. An old rich white guy stood up for the brown community. Would you rather that he just held up old white racist institutions of American golf? Or that he stood up and fought like a hero? PGA spokespeople have backed the stance encouraging golfers to embrace the new LIV owners as they are not looking to enter a golf war. This PGA LIV merger has caused old rich white guys to struggle with their love of golf and their ingrained hatred of the sand darkies. Weird News listeners should note that we were kind enough to clean up that last statement, despite it still being quite a shock to the modern system. Just putting that out there. People have accused the Saudis of sports washing their international reputation, and I don't know where people are getting this idea, and I invite those people to think about the stupid statements that they are making while sitting in one of their new Liv-branded sports wash. Is your reputation a little neglected? Have you said something foolish and need the international community to forget? Clean up your neglected reputations with Liv-brand sports wash. For every stupid and horrendous statement you've made, we will drape you in a sports jersey, a scarf, and teach you the rules to a different game. Liv-brand sports wash. Forget the past. Play the game. The Saudis did, however, credit their inspiration to get more sporty with Australia. Ah, it's nice to be acknowledged. After seeing how much the world liked the plucky young upstart of a country, despite its past genocide attempts and present status as Human Rights Atrocity Magazine's most promising new candidate 10 years running. A great achievement and an impressive medal to add to the national trophy rack down the hall in the pool room. Golf is just the beginning for the Saudis. They have Premier League club Newcastle United, they hosted a Formula One Grand Prix, and as far as brand integration goes, it's a slam dunk no-brainer. Formula One, oil barons, boom! Saudi Arabian club Al Nassr announced the signing of football star Cristiano Ronaldo, and Argentina's Lionel Messi was announced as Saudi Arabia's tourism ambassador. Former Real Madrid forward Karim Benzema also signed a deal to join Saudi Arabia's Al Ittihad football club for a 3-year deal. And in a surprise turn, the Saudi Arabia Tourism Board had also been touted as a potential sponsor of the 2023 FIFA Women's World Cup. Presumably, the world's wealthy aren't ready to tell us about the Saudi-run Indentured Servant Cup that they already sponsor every year, so maybe if you take the millions, then you'll get the secret knowledge. But for now, we don't get to know. They were eventually, however, ruled out following an outcry of opposition from host nations New Zealand and Australia. New Zealand, of course, on compassionate grounds, but Australia said, "Quit trying to muscle in on our territory. We're the lovable rogue with the troubled past who washes away with sports, not you." Apparently, they were even considering purchasing the WWE to establish a foothold in the entertainment industry. But instead, they went with a film fund to ease off the need to rely on oil as their main income source. Will it be enough? Films can pull in a lot of money, and a national film industry cranking out 30 Spider-Mans a year is a pretty spectacular thing to behold. But can it beat the $161 billion profit from oil in 2022? Hollywood has provided $504 billion to the US GDP before the pandemic period, and the US film industry has a net worth of around $91.83 billion. So not quite oil numbers, and for every $10 rise in price of a barrel of oil, Saudi Arabia stands to make an additional $40 billion a year, according to the Institute of International Finance. You can't just raise the price of movie tickets to watch Saudi productions. People will torrent the films if they really want them. You can't torrent a barrel of oil. Those assets are much more liquid, which ironically makes them a more solid investment. Besides, the film industry is being vastly overtaken in the entertainment industry by gaming, which is now worth $145.7 billion. So the Saudis will need to get into the gaming. They already have the right attitude towards women so that they'll fit into the gaming sphere quite well. And half of COD games happen in places that look a lot like certain places of Saudi Arabia. So this could actually really benefit them. In this sense, the Saudis have Australia beat. We may have mastered sports washing, but we refuse to put the investment into arts washing despite the fantastic case study the US has proven on this front. So after the Liv and PGA merger successfully washes the Saudis' reputation, of course some lefties aside, but you always get a few of those banging on about human rights and modern slavery and not destroying the planet, standard stuff really, even the leftists have to deal with the leftists, okay? You'll find that happens. The Taliban are now considering starting maybe their own sports leagues? As many as possible, starting with the Bumper Car League. Oh, except for women's leagues. They're still the Taliban after all, so they won't be starting any women's leagues. It won't be a smooth transition, however. Some changes will come with the PGA and LIV merger. Means that all golf courses will actually be converted into Saudi embassies. Journalists have been saying that they'll probably stop covering the PGA after the merger with LIV. However, the Saudi-backed LIV Golf Tournament has rebranded 9/11 as a hole-in-two and says that they could do better. LIV has gone on to buy out all of the local mini-golf locations to replace all of the obstacles with Twin Tower replicas, which, if you ask me, I feel is a little bit on the nose. But you run your business the way you run it, I guess. Moving on now to shadow government news. According to the ABC, consulting firm PwC, a global professional service company that provides accounting and consulting services, is under fire over revelations some of its senior partners misused confidential Australian government information to help big multinational companies avoid paying more tax. This is more of that middle-of-the-road bias that the ABC is accused of, implying that these companies were paying any tax in the first place. Look, if you have PwC money, usually it's because you haven't paid tax for a while, okay? That's just the deal. Not that the rotting heart at the core of our financial institution being corrupt isn't inherently interesting, but if you fail to phrase it like that, people tune out and they aren't exactly rushing into the cinema to make Avengers tax bill, where the elite team of superheroes is brought in to combat Jeff Bezos and make him pay his tax bill, you know? But this is where this becomes interesting. PwC's biggest Australian client is the federal government, who use them for a range of services, including consulting on defence, education, and transport spending, even potential changes to the law. See, that's interesting, as promised. The company's Australian CEO has quit, 9 senior partners have been stood down, and the man at the centre of the scandal is being investigated by the Australian Federal Police, all while questions over who knew what and when remain unanswered. A similar tactic to that used during the RoboDebt scandal, where PwC was hired and eventually paid not to finish a damning report on the ineffectiveness of RoboDebt. And yet somehow nobody seemed aware of any communications to that effect. Don't worry though, not only some of our smaller agencies, but also some of the largest, like Australia's Federal Police, Defence and Services Australia. You know, the ones who run Centrelink. They apparently were sharing confidential government information in a kind of showing off power, wiggling my cock in your face kind of move in order to win clients. Now, PwC, I am not your mother, but you need to hear this. The kind of clients who would force you to share government secrets in order to do business with you are not the kind of clients that you want. You hang out with the nice clients. It worries me when you hang out with these kind of clients, okay? You gotta be nice to yourself, look after yourself. This has gotten so out of control, even Philippa Lowe said the RBA would no longer use PwC. You know, Philip just one more raise Lowe, who I would have said only cares about his professional reputation, but he seems determined to trash that as well as the livelihoods of the majority of the working class. Lowe told estimates that PwC would be cut off until it responded in a satisfactory way to the scandal, which at this point seems hypocritical. Nobody is satisfied with the work they are doing and the way they have the guts to come out here and criticize others for being scandalous. Ugh, just the audacity. All that said, PwC would still be allowed to complete a project worth between $300,000 and $400,000, helping to calculate how much the RBA had underpaid former staff. Probably because after the RoboDebt scandal, they had seen how good PwC can be to its employers, and they could do with some positive PR. And prudential regulator John Losdale disclosed the major banks had been asked if PwC approached them with any government secrets. old Johnny Boy said ethics would be a key factor in any future procurement. The Australian Prudential Regulation Authority has also spoken with major Australian banks about their ties to PwC, saying if you're dealing with an entity with ethical issues, there are prudential reputational standing issues. You know the Prudential Regulation Authority's motto, if you're going to work with us, don't get caught. Anthony Albanese told Question Time the leaking of confidential tax information by former PwC partner Peter Collins was deeply troubling and an absolute scandal, but he stopped short of promising to refer the matter to the new National Anti-Corruption Committee. After all, they are the government now, and they might need PwC to do or not do some work for them. There is no substitute for experience, eh? And these guys just know instinctively when to not complete a damning job, and you don't want to completely cut off, not just yet, even if the fallout from the matter has already effectively cut PwC off from future Commonwealth work. It's best not to push the waters too much. Which is a concern, as they might not get the 2026 census contract, and who can we trust to fuck up the census in a new and unique way if not PwC? What? KPMG? They don't have it in them. In Question Time, the Prime Minister noted the Australian Federal Police was investigating the matter, so there is a good chance that nothing will come of it. Especially since AFP Commissioner Rhys Kershaw has been forced to defend handing a contract to his mate, ex-New South Wales Police Commissioner Mick Fuller, now a senior PwC employee in Sydney. The same Mick Fuller who was responsible for the Ruby Princess docking in Sydney during COVID, but stopped Sydney's Black Lives Matter protest in case it might spread further COVID, and was caught in a scandal over a share or two of racehorses that went undeclared, making him the perfect candidate for a position at PwC, as he was already accustomed to hiding information from the public. See, turns out former PwC advisor Peter Collins was helping the Australian government design tougher multinational tax laws as part of a global push to stop huge companies minimising their tax bills and shifting profits overseas. Providing information about multiple tax initiatives, meeting agendas, expected timings and government thinking, as well as a confidential copy of an OECD draft paper on mandatory disclosure of tax planning schemes, which outlined possible measures to reduce tax avoidance globally. The PwC partners then formed a global team that would consider how this information could be used for the commercial gain around the globe, but particularly in the United States. These guys are out here like the Avengers of helping corporations dodge taxes, in that they fight to uphold the status quo instead of making things better, and all the money flows back into some sort of mega corporation. PwC announced the 9 partners at the heart of the scandal would be put on leave as part of a suite of actions. They've also apologised to Parliament, while the new acting chief executive, Christian Stubbins, said PwC was committed to learning from its mistakes and building stronger trust and transparency. Just sounds like it means they're going to hide this stuff a bit better. But who knows? Who knows? Green Senator Barbara Pocock believes PwC should repay the $2.5 million it won from US clients based on information supplied by Collins, and it should, but we can do more. I think we are approaching this incorrectly. The next logical step is one of the oldest police maneuvers in history, flipping PwC and making them act as snitches on companies looking to avoid paying tax, publicly punish them, then spend a few years rebuilding the business with company agents ready to test the waters to make some deals. A little good tax agent, bad tax agent, you know? You'll notice none of these companies who have managed to dodge their tax have been punished for taking illegal information without reporting it. So they need a visit from the ghost of taxes past and future to encourage them to develop a more generous nature towards their fellow man. Maybe then businesses will stop asking us to round up our dollars and give them another form of tax-deductible donation. Hey, businesses, just so you know, nobody is getting on board. Nobody is rounding up their purchases. I'm not going to let you make me feel bad because you don't want to pay your taxes. When corporate profits are the number one driver of inflation and you turn around and blame underpaid workers for asking for wages to keep in alignment with the inflation that you yourself are causing and then make them feel bad about not helping you reduce your taxes, I get the feeling that you might not care about helping the disenfranchised. If you really cared about the poor, you wouldn't be overcharging them for bread and rice. Those taxes that you are trying so desperately to reduce would actually be able to provide them with social safety nets, the ability to pay their rent, and maybe, just maybe, save enough money to be able to afford your price-gouged products and services. And that, of course, is the end of another episode of The Bearer of Weird News. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks for hanging around all the way to the end. If you've enjoyed it, please do tell someone, tell a friend, pass it on, let somebody know, share it on some form of social media, I don't know, whatever it is that you do. If you want to hear more, then join the Patreon. We've got some bonus stories on the Patreon, including one coming up for this episode. Please do come out and support the live shows. Personally, I do think they are the best way to support this podcast. So that, again, if you weren't listening at the start, Wage Against the Machine will be going to Darwin the 21st and 22nd of July, to Edinburgh the 5th till the 27th of August, and Sydney the 14th, the 16th, and the 17th of September. All prices and times and all that sort of stuff will be on their websites, whatever city you're in. If you know someone in that city, please send them my way. Otherwise, enjoy yourselves. Thank you so much for hanging around. Look after yourselves. Goodbye.